Last week, we re-released the Sunday Scaries Scented Candle Set, a box set in collaboration with Velibox that includes two scented candles and a trademark wick trimmer, all for just $50. The relaunch was largely successful, and I couldn't be happier about the reception the candle set has gotten from listeners, Instagram followers, friends, and family alike. And while we sold more than half of the inventory in the first 24 hours, there are still some sets available for the holiday season. So whether you're shopping for a loved one or just trying to upgrade your own personal panic room, you can still shop this set at the link in the description of this episode. But without further ado, my name's Will DeFreeze, and this is the Sunday Scaries Podcast, your cure for the Sunday blues. This week, we're doing some listener questions. Let's dive right into them. Do you spiral on Sundays? I mean, I guess we're really diving headfirst in the deep end today. The short answer, no. But it's a little more complicated than that. For a significant portion of my life, I would pretty much spiral every Sunday, no matter the circumstances. And by spiral, I don't necessarily mean cry myself to sleep or have a complete and utter mental breakdown. Sure, there would be Sundays when I may get there, but those were kind of few and far between. My spiraling was pretty much limited to the following. The first part was extreme hangovers. This is a time in my life when I was going out every single weekend. I don't think I need to explain the cause and effect for those. The next one was more of an existential dread. What am I doing with my life? Is this what I'm going to be doing forever? Will I ever find someone to settle down with? How can I make more money? It was a lot of comparing myself to people in other cities and just general hopelessness when it comes to the things in my life that I wanted complete control over. My love life, money, career, the list really just kind of goes on, especially when you're having that anxiety attack. And then the final one was screaming thoughts. And I should clarify, the screaming thoughts thing it doesn't apply to everybody. At one point in my life, I went to a dinner with somebody and they told me that I should tell them about what I do for a living. And at the time, Sunday Scaries was really my side project. And they didn't know what the Sunday Scaries were. So when I was talking to them, I was like, do you ever just have your thoughts screaming at you on Sunday nights? And they looked at me like I was absolutely insane. But if you've ever been there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. These days, though, things are much more subdued. Sure, I have stress just like everybody else, but my Sundays really aren't the root of that stress anymore. I actually look forward to Sundays more than ever now. The irony isn't lost on me that it's now a day I have to work on, but it's now my favorite day of the week, whether I'm working or not. Any tips on how to combat imposter syndrome at work? If you're unfamiliar with imposter syndrome, it's pretty straightforward. It's a psychological pattern in which an individual doubts their skills, talents, or accomplishments and has a persistent internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud. And while you may not identify completely with the being exposed as a fraud part, you can probably think of a time in your professional life when you felt like you were kind of in over your head. But guess what? Everyone does at some point or another. This is something I've dealt with in the past and something I even struggle with at times today. For a long time, it wasn't something I was actually aware of. I didn't even know what this syndrome was. I didn't know what it was at all, and I definitely mentally categorized it as just generalized anxiety as opposed to something more targeted. It really hit hardest when I moved down to Austin to write full time. Writing was something that I'd always had a passion for, but not something I did professionally, so I felt as though I didn't truly earn my way into that job. I went from having hundreds of people reading my columns, and that might be generous, to having a column go viral in my first week of work that received over 2 million hits. To be honest, it was a little overwhelming and a little nerve-wracking. With that many eyes on my work, I couldn't help but think about the worst-case possibilities of so many people reading. What were they going to dig into? What could they find about me? Well, as it turned out, all they wanted to do was read the article and they didn't really care about me. And honestly, that was probably for the better. But when I took a step back and looked at why I was so anxious, I had the realization that it was all for naught. I had to just change my thinking. I would have never gotten hired at my job if I wasn't right for the job or qualified for the job, and that's probably the same for you. This is the most important thing to remember when you're going through it. Also, this many people wouldn't be reading my work if I wasn't doing such a good job. I don't mind patting myself on the back, and I know I'm kind of doing that in this scenario, but this really goes for any job. As long as you're doing the task at hand and you're doing it well, truly nothing else really matters. And finally, for me, I'm my own worst critic. We all are, and that's just something you have to understand. Everyone in the world is selfish. They're too focused on paddling underwater than they are enjoying the view above it. It all still applies to my life today. I never really set out to host podcasts, but sometimes seizing opportunity is more important than being qualified for something. I always just try to remember that. The next one. What's something you do on Sunday that you should do every day? I have several Sunday rituals, which is one of the reasons why Sunday has now become my favorite day of the week. These rituals include, but they're not limited to, drinking coffee or tea while watching soccer starting around 6 a.m., going to a local bakery for pastries or a sandwich if it's getting too late in the day, reading my hometown newspaper, making involved meals that require extensive amounts of time to complete as opposed to just picking up to go, and generally it's just setting up my apartment to be as relaxing as humanly possible. But as for what I wish I'd do every single day, well, I'm not really sure, but I kind of, and this is very selfish sounding, I want to make sure that Sundays are all about me and my wife as well. And so I need to be more selfish on all these other days of the week. While selfishness is often frowned upon, I think it's essential on Sundays when most people aren't hyper-motivated to do things. It's the time of the week that I'm most likely to say no to people if I don't want to do something. It's when I don't feel an obligation to return texts or emails immediately. And hell, even if I might even leave my phone plugged in on my bedside table and not look at it for hours on end. That selfishness isn't out of disdain for others or anything, but a present to myself at a time when I need it most. My Sundays are all about productivity, even if that means just being productive while relaxing. It's kind of a non-traditional way. Yes, I do release a new episode and I spend a lot of my day marketing it or just scrolling the timeline, checking notifications, but most decisions I make on Sunday are for my own personal benefit. Putting your well-being and mental health first shouldn't be reserved only for one day of the week, which is something I think we can all agree on. Next question. What does your iPhone home screen look like? I thought about maybe writing some notes on this, but then I was like, why don't I just bust out my phone and look at it? My home screen is very simple, and that's definitely intentional. After reading a book about trying to not be addicted to my phone, what I realized is that I need less interaction with my home screen than more of it. So on my home screen, all I have is two widgets, which one of them is my weather widget, and it just tells me what the temperature is outside and whether it's sunny or rainy. I also have another widget that is just my screen time. I figured that if I was going to pay attention to my screen time, having it on my home screen would be a really good idea. From there, I have six apps that are just on the screen: photos, maps, reminders, find friends, the clock or alarm, wallet, Viber, which is a way that I keep in touch with some of my friends. We use it instead of texting because we have an international friend. And then my Whoop, which I really want to take out because I don't want to have to rely on that to look at like how productive I've been throughout the day, but I do like it. And then on my bottom bar, I have the phone, my text, iMessage, Spotify, and the camera. I think having the camera in the thumb zone is definitely the perfect thing to do because I just hate trying to go through my phone and find the camera when I need to take a picture of something quickly. And that is my home screen. I don't know about you guys, but ever since I turned 30, I wake up at 3 a.m. more often than I'd like to admit. And when I do, I'm not able to fall asleep for what feels like hours. At this point, it feels like it happens numerous times a week. It doesn't just completely derail your night's sleep, but it can have negative effects on your entire day. That's why I want to introduce you to something new and exciting from a sponsor of ours, Proper, to improve your sleep like it did mine. Proper sleep supplements are heavily researched. They contain clinically backed ingredients at dosage levels, and they're effective while still being gentle enough to not knock you out or leave you groggy in the morning, which is something that so many other things do. Proper's products are minimal, with simple ingredient lists, natural, vegan, gluten and dairy free, sugar free, non-GMO, with no artificial colors or binders. Proper believes that sleep is not a one-size-fits-all thing. Proper offers seven different sleep solutions based on what your personal health goals are, with products that improve your long-term sleep, allow you to fall asleep easily, wake up feeling refreshed and restored, and they even have specific products that also reduce everyday stress, improve brain health, and boost your immune system. They take their commitment to sleep health one step further by not just offering supplements, but also offering one-on-one personalized sleep coaching to help make the behavioral changes you need to maintain better sleep long-term. With Proper, I wake up feeling refreshed, almost like I didn't even take anything the night before. It's truly wonderful. I'm consistently sleeping better, which then leads to better workouts when I'm exercising and improved mood throughout my days. I've tried Proper's Sleep Core, Sleep Plus Calm, and Sleep Plus Clarity, and I can honestly say that I've seen improvements in how quickly I'm falling asleep and how I feel in the mornings. If you're looking to get your sleep back, head to getproper.com and use my code SCARIES at checkout for a special discount off your order. Say goodbye to groggy mornings and hello to restful nights with Proper. Have you been diagnosed with any mental health issues? I don't know if this person was just poking fun at me or not, but you know, I figured I'd answer the question. This is something I've been asked numerous times in the past, but not something I've ever been that forthcoming with. I'm not embarrassed about it or anything, but it's just something that I didn't think I truly needed to showcase on the show. But to answer the question directly, yes, I have. It's very generic. It's just generalized anxiety disorder, which is something a lot of people have, even despite not being diagnosed. If you look it up, the description you'll find for it is pretty straightforward. Characterized by persistent and excessive worry about a number of different things. People with generalized anxiety disorder may anticipate disaster and may be overly concerned about money, health, family, work, or other issues. Individuals with it find it difficult to control their worry. I think on some level, especially if you're listening to this podcast, we can really identify with some of this in several different ways. For me, the phrase Sunday Scaries has always just been a way of labeling my anxiety without putting the weight of a medical term behind it. I think it makes it more approachable and a lot more easy to tackle. Worrying about money, health, family, whatever it may be, or other issues, like the definition says, I think we can all agree that you could use that same definition for Sunday Scaries and it would work pretty much perfectly. I wasn't diagnosed with this until my mid-20s, but it's something I've experienced for as long as I can remember. In saying this, I want to be extremely clear about something. I don't want anyone to feel bad for me. Like I said, I've dealt with this for as long as I can remember, and while debilitating at times, it's no longer something that takes over my life on a regular basis. I've learned hyper-personalized techniques for keeping my anxiety at bay, and it's something I have a great sense and awareness of now, so it's a lot easier for me to control. Part of the reason I haven't discussed it directly in the past is because I don't want to displace my anxiety onto others. I don't categorize this podcast as a true mental health podcast. Do I discuss mental health sometimes? Yeah. Is it the theme of the podcast? Maybe. But am I qualified to discuss the medical side of mental health? Absolutely not. My only hope is that I can take the anxiety that I've dealt with in the past and turn it into something entertaining for people to listen to. There are a lot of websites and podcasts in the world that make outlandish claims about wellness, health, and mental health, and that's just not something I really feel like undertaking. Mostly because a lot of these influencers aren't qualified and I don't want to fall into that category. Some people have even gotten exposed for it, like Emily Oberg and Sporty and Rich. That could be the imposter syndrome kicking in, but I don't think it's beneficial to anyone's mental health when someone unqualified tells you that they can cure it. The most important thing I can say is something that's not exactly groundbreaking. Discussing mental health isn't something anyone should be ashamed of, but it's a subject that needs to be handled delicately. Hopefully, I've done that now and in the past, and hopefully in the future. What Christmas Eve and Christmas traditions does your family have? One reason I love Christmas time is because of the traditions that we've always had within our family. It all begins on Christmas Eve. Whether it's a dinner at my parents' house or an aunt and uncle's house, we sit down with my entire family and we just have a big dinner. Most years, we've missed a few, we go to the candle lighting ceremony at the church that I grew up in. It used to be at midnight, but they've recently moved it up a few hours due to the older crowd of the church. All you really do is just go in, you sing a few songs, listen to a sermon, and then you just light candles with each other, and it's just kind of a beautiful scene. I've actually been brought to tears during it numerous times. It's truly the most emotional that I get during the holiday season, and it's always something that I try to embrace, even though I probably put up a stink about going to church when I was in high school. But at the end of the day, it's something that when I'm with my parents and my sister, it's just really the most fuzzy, feel-good time of Christmas for me. On Christmas Day, I've pretty much always followed the exact same schedule, and that's what I love about it. We wake up at 7:45, and we aim to all be in the living room opening presents at 8 o'clock on the dot. The coffee's brewing, mimosas might be being made, and maybe even a small breakfast. Christmas music plays through our TV, but we always seem to struggle with this part of it. We can never really find a good station, and it's kind of a mail-in job from us, to be honest. But one by one, we take turns opening our presents. Around 11 o'clock, we always take a snowy drive to my best friend's family's house for brunch. We do Bloody Marys, Eggs Benedict, sticky buns, fruit salad, the works. Everyone gets dressed up and we enjoy ourselves. We discuss the presents we received or just generally catching up on things after we haven't seen each other for a little bit. Then after leaving there around 1 o'clock, we normally head home to crash for a bit. After too many mimosas and bloodies, it's normally just time for a nap. Dinner's served around 6:45 and the same family members from the night before are all in attendance. We normally do beef tenderloin with béarnaise. It's truly great. In recent years, I've attempted to take a snowy walk if the weather allows, but that's a relatively new tradition that I haven't completely honed in on yet. Maybe this year I'll really lean into it. What are your favorite garnishes for Bloody Marys? This question has found itself here for a very specific reason. A couple months ago, I did an entire segment on the history of the Bloody Mary. It's a polarizing brunch cocktail, and it's something that I have a love-hate relationship with, being honest. If I could go back in time and make any changes to Bloodies, I would ensure that Bloody Marys were never more than 8 ounces because I just hate drinking them out of giant pint glasses at bars. They're simply too large, and the sheer size of that opens them up to something that I absolutely hate, and that's being overly garnished. But the reason I'm answering this question now? Well, because Bloody Marys are something that I directly associate with Christmas. that best friend's parents' house that I just talked to you about. Well, his dad makes bloodies every year, and it's become a long-running joke between our families that he buys the largest celery stalks he can find. They're borderline hitting you in the face as you drink them. They're actually not even borderline. They're just hitting you in the face. While inconvenient, it's just one of those small inside jokes and traditions that's endured the test of time, and it just wouldn't be the same if we didn't have giant stalks of celery. But I have to admit, if this happened to be at a restaurant, I'd be pretty bummed out by it because I wouldn't know what to do with this thing. Like, it's just a giant stalk of celery that you have to take out and put on the table. When it comes to accoutrements, though, I'm a pretty simple man. I like olives. If a cocktail has olives involved, whether it's a bloody or a martini, I'm always in. I also like a pickle spear. I'm the guy scanning everyone's entrees when they arrive because I want to ask them that famous question of whether or not they're going to eat that pickle. Pickles would be a part of my last meal if I were on death row, so I pretty much include them anywhere I can. And then the final one, which is a little weirder one, is dilly beans. I'm not sure how well-known dilly beans are, but they're essentially just pickled green beans. I don't like green beans, but I pretty much love pickled anything. My general rule for bloody garnishes is that if you can't fit it all on a toothpick, you've just gone too far. Keep your chicken wings, sliders, beef jerky straws, and pieces of pizza off the drink menu. When it comes to bloodies as a whole, less is truly more. Any tips for working from home with a puppy? My Springer Spaniel Rosie is turning 4 on January 10th. When we first got her, it was at a time when my company was between offices, which meant we were all working from home for a 3-week stint that ended up turning into 6 weeks. While I thought being home constantly around my puppy would be heaven sent, I was sadly mistaken. What I quickly learned is that puppies will derail your productivity faster than pretty much anything. They're distracting, they need constant attention, and honestly, they're just cute, so you just find yourself constantly thinking about them for those first couple weeks. I ended up having to come up with some strategies to make life easier on myself, though, because I just wasn't getting any work done. So I thought to myself, what better time to crate train than when I need to get some work done? We always knew we were going to crate train our dog, and it's something I'd recommend pretty much all new dog owners do. But when you're constantly with them in the beginning, you don't want to hear them whimpering from their crate. It's just outright sad. And while I did hate hearing her, I knew the crate training would eventually pay off and make things easier in the future. Noise-canceling headphones helped, and now she willingly lays down in her crate without us even telling her to do so. I also will say that have toys literally just everywhere. This isn't just a tip for working from home with a puppy, but it's just a tip that I've given before for puppies in general. Puppies are inquisitive and constantly need something to explore. When you're in a meeting or dedicating some time to a task, you just lose track of them. I lost several pairs of shoes early on in Rosie's life without implementing the toys everywhere rule, and I probably would have gone insane had I not done that. And the third and final tip, when not crate training, ensure they're always within your line of sight. When I need to do a work task, I always get very into that work task. This means forgetting and ignoring everything that's happening around me. If your puppy is out and you can't hear or see them, you can probably bet they're getting into trouble, honestly. Even if you ensure that both of you are in the same room, they can still climb under the couch or underneath the chair with something valuable that they're going to ruin from you. Not only did this help the mental side of things, but it ensured that I had the peace of mind that she wasn't doing anything destructive while I was in a meeting or something. These aren't revolutionary tips, but realizing that those three things were essential helped me just not go insane. I did lose some great pairs of shoes, though. I've been thinking about making some personal changes lately. I wanted to start by improving my self-care routine. The problem was I had no idea where to start, and then I found Hawthorne. Hawthorne's a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. You start with their quiz. They ask you questions like, what's your favorite drink? How do you like to spend a night out? Do you smoke? What's your favorite cologne? Each one of these questions tailored my products to my exact preferences without having to even think twice. It was actually a really easy quiz to take, and it just took a few minutes from start to finish. With how extensive their product line is, there's no question that your cart will be filled with staples that you love and will keep buying in the future. The products that I got to are now my go-tos. The hydrating body wash, it smells like mint and eucalyptus, two of my favorite things to smell like. The stain-free deodorant, which is aluminum-free and sulfate-free, even paraben-free and silicone-free. And the hydrating shampoo that's hydrating, refreshing, and invigorating, all with that mint and eucalyptus smell as well. If you want to upgrade your self-care routine, Hawthorne is fun and convenient, and its super high-quality products are tailored specifically for your needs. Hawthorne takes the risk out of it by giving you free shipping on your order and returns. And if you don't like your products, they'll even retailer them based on your feedback. So do what I did. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co and use promo code SCARIES to get 10% off your purchase. That's hawthorne.co, promo code SCARIES, hawthorne.co, promo code SCARIES. Does your wife influence your style? Do you wear things even if she doesn't like them? With any relationship, you naturally make changes, sacrifices, and become influenced by that person's lifestyle. With my wife, that's really no different. And while this oftentimes can be a bad thing in relationships, it's kind of an inside joke for us. Truthfully, I think my style has more infiltrated her life than her style has mine. She'll readily admit this, I think. And just by looking at how our personal styles have evolved over the past 5 years or so, it's clear that my influence has become the larger one. We both dress fairly casually overall, at leisure when we have nothing to do, and because of the dress-down nature of Austin in general, we never really get that dressed up unless it's a special occasion. But where this becomes an issue is where the notion of the inside joke comes in. So many times after I get dressed well before she does, she'll put on an almost identical outfit to me, whether it's the color, just jeans and a black t-shirt, something like that. This isn't a conscious decision by her, but something that's just happened naturally over time, and honestly, it drives me absolutely insane. We laugh about it, and normally one of us changes, but I'll often look at her and say something like, "Are you seriously planning on wearing that?" before she realizes that we look exactly alike. I just stand there pretty much wearing the male version of her outfit. But whether it's her wearing more black or the fact that she bit the bullet and purchased an Aimé Leon d'Or sweatsuit from their 2020 fall collection, I think that even she would admit that she's gravitated closer to me than I have to her. How have you dealt with physical insecurities in the past? I don't care who you are, you have physical insecurities. Even the best-looking people in my life have expressed their insecurities, justified or not. I learned at an early age that I wasn't going to grow up and be a classically handsome man. I don't necessarily think I'm ugly, but I, like everyone, have things that I would love to change about myself. Dad legs, bushy eyebrows, lack of a definitive jawline, slender shoulders, doughy waistline, small toenails. The list goes on of my imperfections, and it just doesn't end. I used to care a lot, but I realized that there's not a whole lot that I can do to change my appearance outside of just working out and just taking care of myself. Sure, a haircut and some grooming can help a lot, but overall, we look how we look. But one thing I do love doing, whether it's on a first date or while just having beers with a group of friends, is to ask a simple question to everyone. What's your favorite physical attribute you have? For me, it's fairly simple, my beard. Anytime I've played this game, that's the first thing people point out, which is lucky for me considering my lack of jawline that I referenced. But once people start talking about their favorite physical attributes, everyone seems to forget about their least favorite. Nothing builds confidence in you like people pointing out what they love about you during this game. It's so much fun and everyone actually enjoys it. The lesson I learned from this game, however, is a simple one. Embrace the good and just maintain the bad. If you're proud of something on your body, showcase it. There's a reason that I haven't clean shaven in at least 3 years now. And if you're self-conscious about something, do what you can to make it look decent enough that you just don't care anymore. For me, I can't change my dad legs or jawline, but I can make edits to my everyday primping to make sure that they're not the first thing that people notice about me. We're all insecure, but hardly anyone ever notices what we notice about ourselves. Unfortunately, it took me about 27 years to figure that out. As a relatively new listener of both of your podcasts, I have to ask, how did you get into podcasting in the first place? Well, I was driving to Houston one night when I started really workshopping the possibility in my head. There were other companies out there that were releasing a lot of podcasts, and I just couldn't get it out of my head that we needed to be one of them. The media company I worked for had entertained podcasting, but it wasn't something we had totally gone all in on yet. Throughout the 3-hour drive, I really didn't think about much else. I had looked at other media companies and witnessed their success with the medium. I knew it was going to explode, and I didn't want to be left behind. But most of all, I just thought it would be fun. But with the good, there was also some bad. There's a definite stigma around starting a podcast, especially when you're a white dude in his mid to late 20s. I had a pretty significant fear of public speaking, and while podcasting isn't exactly public speaking, talking into a microphone is kind of intimidating still. But most importantly, I didn't have a clear-cut idea of what I wanted to do. The Monday after my trip, I walked into Dylan's office, one of my co-hosts of Circling Back, along with Dave Ruff. All I said was, "I think we should record a podcast." I didn't have much direction outside of that, and honestly, I'm shocked that Dylan even went for it. We both had a great rapport with Dave, so we thought it was natural that we'd invite him on the episode as well. Truthfully, we had no idea what we were doing. We had topics, but no structure. We didn't have a name for it until about 10 episodes in, and we didn't really have an overlying strategy for a very long time. Luckily for us, we had an audience, though. Enough of an audience to make us understand that the opportunity was there for us. It was just staring us in the face. If you've been following along since the days of that now-canceled show, you know that we became minorly successful with it. With that success came more ideas for me. Specifically, the idea to do this podcast. I knew it was a different style and format than the other podcasts that I'd been a part of, but I also was positive that it would work. And after negotiating terms and recording a few test episodes, well, things definitely seemed to work out. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to everyone as a career path, but I couldn't be happier finding myself where I am today. You know, even though I still tell Uber drivers that I just work for a media company for fear that they're going to turn on one of my episodes while I'm still in the car. If you liked what you heard today, make sure to subscribe, review, or tell a hungover friend in need about this podcast. By subscribing, you guarantee that each and every episode gets delivered directly to your phone every Sunday morning. You can also follow along on Twitter at @SundayScaries and Instagram, which is at @Sunday.Scaries. Or you can follow me both on Twitter and Instagram at @WillDeFreeze. And remember, always trim the wicks on your scented candles. See you next Sunday.